strategic liability rather than a strategic asset, which it has since 1967, if they lost that support, the unraveling of the Zionist project could become very dynamic. So Israel has to stay in a state of perpetual warfare against the Palestinians, disrupting any Palestinian unity, and thus keeping the United States, which has this sort of automatic response whenever there's a military conflict, to stand with Israel, to keep that sort of relationship, that strategic partnership, alive and well. So it's a long-term proposition. They want to weaken Hamas. I agree with the other guests. They can never defeat Hamas or the idea of resistance. The Palestinian people exist as a people because of the concept of resistance, nor can they fully drive out the Palestinian people. But they want to maintain the strategic status quo, which requires the disruption of Palestinian unity and the strategic partnership with the United States, which always kicks in at the time of military conflict.
Mr. Ayers, I wanted to put something to you. You know, $225 million has now been approved by U.S. lawmakers in order to be sent to Israel as emergency aid for the Iron Dome missile system. And, you know, Mr. Becker, they're mentioning U.S. interests, strategic interests in the region. Is Israel helping or hurting U.S. strategic interests?
It depends on what you consider those interests to be. If you consider the interests to be one of retaining a strong, supportive ally in the region, then the strategic interests of the United States are being served. If you consider the strategic interests of the United States one of having regional peace and stability, well, they're not being served. So depending on how you choose to define strategic interests, they either are or they're not being satisfied. I think rather than speculate as to what may or may not be, we need to step back and just examine some of the facts in the matter. However fragile it may be, the state of Israel is not going to disappear. It's there, and it will continue to be there. As long as there are neighbors who don't accept the fact that the state of Israel is there and will continue to be there, there's going to be conflict. And you can't stop that. It's going to continue. The United States will never abandon Israel. They just won't walk away and leave them there to their own devices. The state of Israel will not crumble into dust with people scattering to the winds like the tribes of ancient Israel going around the world. It's not going to happen. So the question becomes, what is happening now and what is going to change in the future? What's happening now is a continuation of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's just an ongoing dialogue. There has been nothing that has happened in this last outbreak of hostilities that will change the underlying causes and the underlying motives and the ultimate underlying outcome of this conflict. This is nothing more than a continuation of combatant dialogue.
A continuation of combatant dialogue. Mr. Becker, I wanted to put that to you then. Strategic interest, as you had mentioned in your earlier answer, if you could expand on that and also respond, of course, to Mr. Ayers.
Well, in 1956, the United States did not see Israel as an extension of American power. In fact, it was highly critical of and condemned the Israeli invasion into Suez. That was a British, French, and Israeli project. In 1967, when the U.S. was bogged down in Southeast Asia, unable to do or manage its affairs in the Middle East, they constructed a new sort of doctrine, what was called later the Nixon Doctrine, using the Iran, the Shah, and Israeli as the principal gendarmes, the props of American interests in the region. Then there was the Iranian Revolution, and we know from the rest of the Middle East that other revolutions can and will take place against monarchies and dictatorial and authoritarian governments. And they can, even if they're partners with the U.S., they can be dislodged by revolutions. Israel as a settler state is a constant dependency. It's a client, and it was seen that way by the original founders of Zionism. Some colonial patron had to be in the picture. Since 1967, that patron has been the United States. Now, yes, it's likely that the United States will maintain its relationship with Israel, but I disagree about the strength or the enduring prospects for the Zionist project, because the revolutions that have been failed in the last couple of years in Egypt and elsewhere don't mean that the revolutions won't keep happening. And the United States, in order to have a long-term policy in the Middle East, even for its own, the interests of empire, may see at a certain point Israel as a strategic liability. The American people are going through a seismic shift in their consciousness. They are now no longer looking at Israel as a absolute partner. The Jewish American population, the younger parts of that population at least, no longer view Israel as a refuge for an endangered Jewish people. They see it as a privileged nation that's carrying out war crimes, and even if they foundationally agree with Israel's right to exist, they disagree with the policies, the regular policies of the Netanyahu government and the increasingly right-wing and racist character of Israeli society. What happens in America can have a profound impact on the long-term prospects for Israel. That's the point that I'm trying to make.
Okay, I want to put that to Mr. Ayers too, but Mr. Ayers, I also wanted to ask you then, at this point, as you mentioned, this is, you know, constant fighting, essentially, every few years we're seeing now Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. Wouldn't it just be better then to come to some sort of solution, to have a fair mediator? Because the United States has proven that it is not a fair mediator because it has too much bias towards the Israeli side.
I think that depends on having several things. One, the identification of a fair mediator. It may be very difficult to find a mediator acceptable to both sides. But assuming there is a mediator that can be located, that both sides would be willing to sit down with and allow to work through some other difficulties, you then face a dilemma. And that dilemma is on the side of Hamas or on the side of the Palestinians, the question is, do their government mechanisms have sufficient stability and control to ensure that any sort of an agreement that may be struck across the negotiating table will be complied with by all of the members of the combatant elements within those two groups, Hamas and the Palestinians. And given the fragility of the situation there, it only takes one or two hotheads to reignite the fighting between the parties. So even if we had a fair, impartial, excellent mediator, and some sort of an accommodation may be struck, I'm not sure that it could be implemented in a way that was reliable for both parties.
Mr. Becker, how do you feel about that? Do the Palestinians...
Hamas offered a 10-year ceasefire. I think a real solution, not maybe the mega solution, but a solution that would be at hand would be to lift the siege of Gaza. That's not an impossibility. The siege was imposed, the seven, now eight, almost 8-year long siege, not because of Hamas rocket attacks, but because the Palestinian people in their majority voted for a Hamas government in the election in 2007. And the Israelis and the American government supporting them decided to impose a siege. And that's the issue right now. The blockade is the issue. The Egyptian government is also hostile to Hamas, obviously, because it was of its previous connections to the Muslim Brotherhood. And they have reinforced the siege as well. But if the siege of Gaza were to lift, that would be a practical, palpable, and realizable step that could lead to a change in the political situation. The Israelis want to keep the siege on forever if they can. They're just looking for pretext after pretext because they want to basically just wear down the Palestinian people in all places. I mean, that's their real perspective. It's not peace. It's just endless war. But there has to be other people in the world, other governments in the world, and a growing global grassroots movement that demands that the siege be lifted. So Israel won't bow to that, but Israel isn't completely independent. It's interdependent on its relationship with the United States, and that's where the power has to be directed towards, the global power. Here in tomorrow in Washington, D.C., I'm not sure when we're going to be broadcast, but on Saturday, August 2nd, tens of thousands of people in the biggest demonstration yet are going to be surrounding the White House demanding cut all U.S. aid to Israel. There's a sea change going on in terms of American public opinion.
We just have under 2 minutes left, Mr. Ayers, so I wanted you to respond to that. Why doesn't Israel lift the siege on Gaza?
Well, let's go revisit what you said a minute ago. If we could find an impartial arbiter between the two sides and they could negotiate some sort of a solution. A negotiated solution implies both sides give up something and both sides gain something. When you talk about lifting the siege, that's a distinct possibility. But what is it then that you would see accruing to Israel if they lifted up the siege? What do they gain from that? And the answer so far is I've heard no one discuss anything that might be an incentive to Israel to lift the siege other than it'll make the rest of the world feel better. And that's not necessarily a strong motivator.
Well, what about the cessation of military conflict? What about the cessation of military? I mean, Hamas has offered a 10-year ceasefire if the siege is lifted. It's a very minimal program. It's not complicated. Israel's imposing a siege. The siege is not being imposed on Israel. Israel has, well, the incentive for the Israeli people is the military conflict would come to an end.
The military conflict preceded the imposition of the siege, preceded that. The siege was a response to military conflict.
It's escalated conflict. Because of the siege.
Well, it's escalated.
It's escalated because of the siege.
By the conflict. So if you want to talk about a negotiated arbitrator, both sides
why do you need an impartial mediator when the United States government sends Israel $4 billion a year? Why can't the U.S. government say to Israel, you know, theoretically, you know, end the siege of Gaza, we're going to cut aid? Wouldn't that really end the siege of Gaza? I think it would.
Well, why can't Iran say to Hamas, stop shooting our rockets at the Israelis? I mean, come on. These people have to live with each other, not their surrogates that are manipulating them from behind the scenes. The Palestinians,
okay, gentlemen, unfortunately, I do apologize for interrupting and coming in here.
But
unfortunately,
since
the time has gotten the best of us. But of course, we will try to continue this conversation on a later date if we can. That was Mr. Brian Becker from the Answer Coalition speaking to us live from Washington. And we were also joined by former U.S. intelligence officer Bob Ayers, who was joining us live from London. Gentlemen, we appreciate both of your insights here on Press TV. And viewers, we do, of course, appreciate you joining us here as well for this edition of The Debate.